that day I dropped him off, I did not realize that it was going to change the trajectory of the rest of my life. I think the biggest change comes from people who have personally experienced something, and it has changed the direction of their lives. It was something I hadn't felt passion for ever. And all of a sudden, my whole value system shifted to justice and advocacy when that had never been part of my value spectrum before. For me, stories are where it starts, because it's the story that builds that momentum and that builds that energy for you. You probably have 30 things in your lived experience that you have an opportunity to change. It's just whether or not you see yourself as being somebody who can champion that change.
We're wired for connection, but most of us are faking it to fit in. I'm Tanya Kubo, and this is Find Your Freaks, the podcast that flips the script and spotlights the quirks you thought you had to keep quiet. Subscribe now and head to findyourfreaks.com for show notes and extras. Because around here,
what makes you weird makes you wonderful. Normal was never the point.
We love to talk about community, how to build it, grow it, and sustain it. But today we are talking about what happens when you take your lived experience, draw a line in the sand, and say, not on my watch. So today I have Nikki James Zellner, and she is professionally a brand advisor, a creative strategist. And the reason she's here today, the story I want you to hear about, is that she is a fierce advocate for purpose-driven change. And so, Nikki, I am just going to have you jump right in and tell us, who are your freaks and why do you love them?
So I have to shout out my freaks. They are on every neighborhood watch, I'm sure. They are in every town in America. They are most likely mothers, but they don't have to be. So I would say my freaks are certainly parent activists or community activists that have lived experience in something and decided to take that lived experience and use it for fuel to create bigger change, whether that's in their own neighborhoods, whether that was in their industry, or whether that's in their communities or the United States or the world as a whole. These are people who didn't set out to really become activists. They didn't set out to say, I'm going to study political science and go into the government and start a nonprofit organization. These are people who survived something that was likely traumatic or jolting to what they knew as the status quo. And they had to navigate systems, and they had to navigate red tape, and they had to navigate the way that people looked at them in public and say, this happened to me. I'm not going to let it happen to anybody else. Those are the people I love.
Oh my gosh. So what I'm hearing, it's the people who show up at the school board meeting, the city council meeting, the ones who write the letters to the editor and are just bringing a voice to what they see that they don't think everybody else is quite understanding the gravity of the situation.
Yes, that is correct.
So let's talk about how you got here, because, you know, I just read off your list of professional accomplishments and movement maker, change agent wasn't necessarily in there. So how did you land to be the voice for advocates, particularly citizen advocates at this point?
So for me, it was a quiet day in 2020. It was just before the pandemic closed the United States down. So this was February of 2020. And my two children were 4 and 3 at the time, and they went to daycare because I was a working parent. My husband was active duty military, and we were one of the millions of people in the United States who had to put their kids in childcare in order to have a dual income household. Mm-hmm. And that day I dropped them off, I did not realize that it was going to change the trajectory of the rest of my life. So I get a text at about 2 in the afternoon, my kids had been there since about 7 that morning, that said, there's been a gas leak, come pick up your kids. We've evacuated the building. And when I pull down that street, there's fire department, ambulances, police cars. Kids are not in the daycare structure anymore, but when you walk into where they were evacuated to, you just see hundreds of parents of about 80 kids, you know, 6 weeks to six mm-hmm. years old. And what it turned out to be was a carbon monoxide leak from a furnace that was faulty. It was a switch on the furnace that malfunctioned. And because the daycare did not have carbon monoxide detection, because they weren't required to by Virginia law, No one knew that the kids and the staff were being poisoned for over 6 hours until kids started passing out and people started calling 911. And so that was the day that everything changed for me. Instead of really being that freaked out parent saying, this is a fluke, I instead was asking questions before the lawyer shut everybody down.
Them lawyers.
I wanted to ask those young care providers, what was your experience? What was going on? See if I could get a common denominator of experiences. What time did this actually start? What time were the officials called? What steps did you take to communicate with your staff and let them know that you think that there might be a problem? What symptoms were the kid experiencing? And so when you have young care providers caring for also young children, it's very compartmentalized. It's not like they were in a big space where they all could see everything going on. It was individuals looking after 10 to 20 kids, you know, maybe two individuals per room, who were also being impaired by toxic gas. And so to me, that was, there was certainly a couple of days there where I was in blame mode, right? Where I was, whose fault is this? Who's to blame for this? My kids could have died, et cetera. But then there was a point, and I have a journalism background in terms of I worked in community newspapers for close to 15, 20 years.
Me too.
Yeah, so it's...
We'll compare notes another day.
Exactly. So you kind of wear many hats. You know what to do when you get to the scene. And, you know, you're the person who happens to be at the newspaper that they send out. So I was asking lots of questions to get data before the before everybody got shut down. And what I learned is that there was no detection. And so for me, that was the weird part. Like, what do you mean there was no detection? Like, I have to double wrap my breast milk. I have to fingerprint three times to get in the door. What do you mean there was no carbon monoxide detection? And I found out that it was a loophole in the Virginia State Building Code that was the reason that this daycare was allowed to exist without carbon monoxide detection while having a gas appliance that could produce it. And so I thought to myself, like, that doesn't feel right. That doesn't seem right. This seems like a safety issue. And so I called the governor as if he had nothing else to do during the pandemic.
Because we journalists are not afraid to pick up a phone.
No, I will
pick
up a phone.
That is one thing you can say.
I don't start with the local team. I mean, I just go up to the guy who's in charge of everything. And they said, well, in order to change the building code for the state, you have to change the law for the state because the building code is based off of Virginia law. And so me, who avoided politics in school, have avoided politics for the majority of my life. I'm a peacekeeper. I like to be a peacekeeper. I was a little bit mortified. However, every single time I remember, I would look back at pictures or I would see a story, I would get more and more fired up. And I was like, no one is changing this. This has probably been happening for 20 years and nobody has taken the steps to change this. I know how to brand. I know how to pick up the phone. I know how to pitch media. I'm going to take this on. What I didn't realize is that it wasn't just a Virginia problem. It was a United States problem. It was an international problem. And I just happened to become the poster child of a mom who had a happy ending in the sense that my kids are okay now. They are 9 and 8. They still go to public school. I still fight for carbon monoxide protection. I still send in their school supplies a carbon monoxide alarm for every classroom that they're in. You know, I do that. That's part of my school supply list because I don't trust the school to have their back. So I became that person who started paying more attention in the space, started understanding how budgets get spent and how people make decisions when it comes to school safety. And so I really found my people during that. I found the people that wanted to complain about everything. And I found the people that said, this is a problem. How do we solve it? And I really saw myself in the second camp.
Oh my gosh. So there's so much there because as, you know, I'm a working mom as well. My youngest went to actually both of my girls went to exactly the same type of daycare that you described, daycare and preschool. I worked at a university, so they went to a university preschool. And, you know, Granted, in their preschool, kind of, we shut down the preschool for everything, right? That's right. Just kind of one of our things. But we were, you know, I was a public information officer, so I remember controlling the flow of information. I know exactly what you mean when you talk about, like, you can have a lot of conversations until the lawyers come in.
Yep.
And then everything gets shut down. But one thing that I just want to ask about, because I don't know if this is a nationwide thing. I know that very much this surrounds my peer group in California. Is there is this fear, and it might be because I'm married to a school teacher as well, of being that mom, right? Like, nobody wants to be that mom. We don't want to be the mom that when the principal sees us coming, they want to duck and hide. We don't want to be the one that the office talks about long after we leave. And yet, everything you're telling me right now would not have happened or been possible without you being willing to be that mom.
Yes, agreed. I'd like to say that there are four groups, right? There are really four groups of people in my change-making journey, and I'm writing a book about my experience because the question that I got asked the most was, how did you go create that change, right? You don't have, I don't have a college degree. I was just a mom. All of my business knowledge has been accumulated because of my roles in the business world. It did not come from a proper schooling education. It has come from real life on the streets, right? I like to say I'm street smart, not necessarily book smart. You know, my husband had to explain to me all of the HVAC related things when it came to carbon monoxide so that I could truly understand it in order to explain it to somebody else. And so the more people were asking me, you know, I have this thing that's important to me. What should my first step be? I started realizing I wasn't necessarily just the carbon monoxide lady. I was becoming the how do you create change lady when you see yourself as just this. Now, for some people, that's becoming that mom. In our world, we like to call it the Karens, right? The ones who complain about everything, go to every coffee store manager and say the kid next to me isn't drinking anything. He shouldn't be here. You know, those people. So I like to say there are four groups of people. When it comes to a problem that you could create change around, you're either a lapdog. You're not going to create change around that problem until somebody tells you to do it. Until it affects your paycheck or until it affects, you know, your boss is telling you to do this or your parent or your neighbor is telling you to do this. You're not going to solve that problem in any way, shape, or form. You're just going to let that problem exist. You're going to know that problem exists. You're not going to expense any energy towards it, positive nor negative. You're just a lapdog, right? The second group is what I call the guard dogs. Your guard dogs are the people who post things that are important to them on social media, but they never actually get up and create change. They're signed this petition. What can we do about this guy that stands at the corner peddling for change? But they're not actually thinking about, okay, why is the guy on the corner peddling for change? Instead, they're more concerned with how does this make our city look? That there's a guy on the corner peddling for change, right? They want to get rid of the guy, not get rid of the problem.
All bark, no bite?
All bark, no bite, right? Okay. They are people who will talk about the problem day and night. You feel like the problem's very important to them. But when you ask them what they're actually doing about it, it's nada. Big old goose egg. They're not actually doing anything that requires more than a click of a button, right?
Yeah.
The third group is your attack dogs. This is what we know as the Karen. This is the person who doesn't play well in the sandbox. This is the person who films the bird watchers and starts yelling at them. They have no clue about empathy. Everything is, this is happening to me, and I will fight people because it's happening to me. It has nothing to do with their community. It has nothing to do with the well-being of anybody else involved. It has everything to do with they're mad about something. They want other people to know that they're mad about it, right? And they don't always go about things the way in which would be most receptive to creating change. So you got to think about those people. Their heart might very well be in the right place. I can think about all of the directions I took during my carbon monoxide advocacy. And I can tell you now that if I would have taken the attack dog stance, I would not have gotten very far. Even though I had the story to go with it, I could not have created the change because nobody would talk to me.
Right.
So I had to come at it from group four. And group four for me is like, these are my freaks. These are my people. They're the watchdogs. These are the people who see something wrong and want to understand the problem before they start throwing out all of the solutions to solve it. I could absolutely say I want a carbon monoxide alarm in this building because my kids go here. But what I didn't understand is that this was a state problem. It was a national problem. And there were lots of nuances that I didn't understand yet because I hadn't had conversations with the right people to understand right. why that didn't exist. You know, so there are systems and there are rules. And if you take the attack dog stance, you're not going to be invited to the table. And it's going to feel very much like you're constantly fighting a battle. But when you take a watchdog approach, when you can start asking questions and come at it from a place of, I'd like to understand your point of view. I'd like to understand why this doesn't exist yet, according to you, according to what problems you're needing to overcome to make that happen. That's really where change can happen. And so I would say, yes, we want you to have the fire of that mom, because that's going to take time. It's going to take energy. It's going to take persistence and perseverance and grit. But I don't want you to have the attitude and the walls of that mom. You're going to have to play in the sandbox. And you have to do that through open communication.
Wow. I love this. So it's lapdog, guard dog, attack dog, watchdog.
Correct.
Okay. Making sure that I have that accurately summarized. Because a lot of what you say, so it reminds me of another guest we had on the show, Rachel Allen, who ended up, she is quite, I would say, notorious, she might not say that, in the federal prison system as a result of her husband becoming incarcerated.
Okay.
So similar to what you describe, right? Just living life, how she lived life, and then one day her husband is incarcerated, and there is the fact that she's isolated from most of her community as a result, but then... You know, she had no reason to know anything about the prison system until right. that point. And so then as being somebody who was there to visit a loved one in the prisons, recognized a whole bunch of stuff going on. And like you mentioned, sought to figure out why, then had to educate herself on what the law says.
Right.
And then, you know, fast forward a few months even and ends up having to testify in Congress. In order to affect change. Because like you said, in her case, there was an aspect of changing law, but it was really about changing practice to follow policy and policy to follow law.
Right.
But loopholes in the law allow practices that aren't quite in alignment.
Right.
And so one big difference between what you describe and what she described. In her situation, she found herself surrounded by people who society would not pay any attention to. The other individuals in that visiting waiting room, right, are just people that society likes to bypass. And she, as a copywriter, was like, okay, well, I can tell a good story.
Yep.
So all I have to do, let me get to know these people, right? And I will tell their story for them. Whereas you have lived this experience and then said, you know, I would just argue, I'm going to put words in your mouth and say, you don't have time nor energy to tell other people's stories for them. So you have empowered people to tell their own story and to affect change that way.
Right.
Was that intentional or was that just put one foot in front of the other and here we are?
So one of the interesting things, when you go to change a law, typically people will only listen to you if you're a constituent of their state or their district, right? So when it comes to law changing, and not everybody who wants to go change make wants to get involved in the law process, right? Mm-hmm. Another difference I would say between my story and hers is that I have the feel-good end of the spectrum, right? It's kids, it's babies who can't take care of themselves, where her experience is probably more like, well, they made these choices, and so it's, you know, this is what they get for making those choices. Now, I don't believe that, obviously. I don't think that these people should be bypassed, but there is a stereotype and a lens being used there. I certainly think I was able to go farther because I was helping kids who couldn't help themselves. Right.
Right.
And I was speaking for children. I was speaking for children's safety. And school safety is always a hot topic. My school safety isn't relative to mental health or relative to intruders or shootings, but it is absolutely still in the school safety bubble. So I would say when it came to asking others to kind of take the steps forward, one of the things I initially wanted to do was, okay, who are the people that have been impacted by this in other towns and reach out to those parents? It was very difficult to do because a lot of those parents were involved in legal disputes with their school systems. They can't talk about it. I chose not to sue. so that I could go out and speak publicly and create change.
Can you just explain that a little bit? Because I think, because I've worked in a school system, right?
Yes.
In PR.
Yes.
I totally understand the impact of the choice you made, because it's a big choice.
It's a big choice.
It is not as light as it just sounded, as you pleasantly summed it
no,
up.
No, I probably forewent millions of dollars to my own personal family that I probably would have used towards paying off debt, and certainly probably still taking the steps to set up CO Safe Schools and make that difference. But when you are involved in a legal dispute, you are not allowed to give public commentary, to go on the news and talk about your situation. And these disputes can take years. You know, it's not something that goes away in 2 months unless you settle. And oftentimes during settlements, you're asked for a non-disclosure. You're not allowed to discuss the terms of the settlement and what happened. And knowing that, you know, I just happened to have friends that were involved in lawsuits previously for medical reasons, and they weren't allowed to tell their stories. My whole business is built around your story and your voice. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was a natural progression of the story is important to tell. The story is the most important thing to tell. I have to talk about this loophole. And I have the skill sets to do it in a way that can get more traction than, say, a normal person who's never had media training or know how pitching works or knows people at the local newspaper to kind of pick up the story, right? But what I will say is there came a point where it didn't just become about carbon monoxide for me. It became about helping other people understand that these kinds of things happen to us all the time, but do we have blinders on as to that was my knock to make a change? We're so busy going about our lives, and we're so busy about doing the grocery store run and dropping our kids off at practice that we don't hear those little whispers that says, this is a change that could be made because of your lived experience. You know, that ball going off the ball field and hitting a kid in the head and that kid having a stroke or having brain injury because there's no netting on the ball field is a change you could have gotten involved in but didn't. Now, granted, they might be the parent of the child with the brain injury, and they might have a whole new amount of things on their plate that they didn't expect to have to deal with. But there's something to be said for, I think the biggest change comes from people who have personally experienced something, and it has changed the direction of their lives. So whether it's getting to the point in your life where you're caring for your elderly parents and helping them navigate Medicaid or Medicare. It could be that you work in a local hospital and you're constantly answering the question, where is the lab? Because there's not signage where it needs to be. And the majority of people that walk through that hospital are elderly or limited mobility. You're making them walk all over God's green earth when you could just put a sign right at the beginning where they're walking in the door. So it doesn't have to be this big landscape of change. It can literally be, I want to start small in the place where it happened for me. And then when you get those wins, you start to realize I could ripple out. I could ripple out to the city. I could ripple out to the system. I could ripple out to the world, you know, like whatever that is for you, wherever that time and energy lives. And what I found as a watchdog is that I had the skills to keep going. I may not have had the time, but I made the time. And the energy really fired me up. It was something I hadn't felt passion for ever. And all of a sudden, my whole value system shifted to justice and advocacy when that had never been part of my value spectrum before. I had encouraged others to do it, but I had never physically activated that within myself. And then when I did, I realized how empowering that was to feel like you could control something, felt like you could be involved and help other people. And that was a really great feeling that I don't think we experience outside of a volunteer hour or two, you know, at something we're not necessarily involved in. It's just part of our resume. You know, like my work puts deployment packages together for troops. Well, you don't necessarily have a troop member who's involved in it. It's just something your work does. So you get to say it's part of your volunteerism. But what if you took those hours and actually put it towards something you had lived experience with? And how much more of a difference could you make?
Yeah. So you reference lived experience quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And before we started recording, you said something that I thought was really powerful, which is that if you've lived it, you're qualified to lead it.
Yes.
And having come from higher ed, right? Like, I know that there is a lot of pressure around, but what's your degree in? What's your education? What's your skills? What's your training? And, you know, you reference that you don't have,
I don't have
all
that.
These letters after your name.
No.
So I'm curious, what did you have to unlearn in order to embrace that belief that if you've lived it, you're qualified to lead it?
I think the biggest thing for me to unlearn was that there is room in the system if you actually are willing to get involved in the system. The big thing for me, I think, that I had the misunderstanding about is that people didn't want my involvement in the system because they wanted to keep things status quo. In reality, they didn't want uneducated, and by uneducated, I mean people that weren't familiar with the problem or people that couldn't contribute to the dialogue of the problem, meaning you're a recipient of their services or you've experienced something firsthand. They didn't want Monday morning quarterbacks, people who were coming in and talking about something that needed to be changed, who didn't have any relationship with the system as a whole, right? So for me, what I had to unlearn was, I have a relationship with this. I absolutely deserve a seat at the table. My experience is one that they might not know about. Now I've been invited to speak at the National Fire Protection Association in Las Vegas in front of 90,000 something fire marshals, right? Like, it's crazy. So for me, the unlearning was, there is a space for me. I need to respect the fact that there are processes that exist and that the work they do isn't meaningless and it isn't trying to keep me out. It's trying to protect that the steps that are taken are actually taken for the right reasons and not just because somebody comes in and says it should change. Why should it change? How long have they been involved in the process? How are they affected by the outcomes that are occurring of our current system? And I feel like that's where I really needed to unlearn something, is I needed to share my perspective and understand where I fit in that. And that to go in there and understand that my perspective isn't the only one. I can absolutely feel like I'm right and this needs to happen, but I also have to be open to the 360 view and that my little piece of the pie is this, and I was not yet aware of all of that. And I needed to understand how I fit within that. How do I navigate? And when I did that is where I could see where I actually wanted to create change instead of this big space, which seemed very overwhelming.
Find Your Freaks runs on coffee and community. That's right. No mattress ads, no gimmicks, just real talk. Listener support is how we keep the freak flag flying and the mic hot around here. Support the show at tanya.link/coffee. Now back to the episode.
Mm-hmm. The big carbon monoxide safety space. No, I want to focus here. Daycares, schools, college campuses. And I want to focus on layman conversations. I do not want to focus on safety science and the technology and the you need a degree to come in and maintain. I want to be the person responsible for change in the space of the occupants, the people that are inside these buildings who don't know where they're protected and where they're not. Mm-hmm. And I want to be responsible for making sure that they are educated and aware on where they're safe, where they're not, and what to do when they experience these kinds of symptoms. That's where I can make the most impact.
And so we're back again to, this is what makes a watchdog different than an attack dog, different than a guard dog. And I think everybody listening already can understand where a lapdog is completely separate from the equation.
Right.
But I do feel like when a lot of people are thinking in their mind, they would confuse attack dog, guard dog, and watchdog.
Yes. They would.
And so one of the things that I was thinking about when you were describing kind of those four groups is that the attack dog and the guard dog are highly visible, but the watchdog makes an impact.
Yes. There's an action behind it.
Yeah. And so I was just wondering if you wouldn't mind kind of expanding on that from the community perspective, because so much of what you're talking about is really affecting change at the community level and then having that go higher, or in your case, having to go top down,
because
it varies. What do you think happens when people or communities confuse that visibility with impact?
I feel like, and this is also an introverted extroverted thing, right? Yeah. Like if you're the person that goes and listens to all of the public meetings, but you never get up and talk, mm-hmm. you're gathering all of the data and you're using that to be an informed citizen and make decisions as a voter. And so where you want to make the impact is in the ballot box for you, mm-hmm. right? And in the educated, I'm informed, I understand what's going on in my community so that I can better decide where I want to spend my volunteer hours and what's going on where and how it's going to affect my property taxes, right? What I will say to the four groups is that all of us are all four. There are certain times where we behave like one or the other, or sometimes we're blending the two. And so what I want people to recognize is, when am I behaving like a lapdog when I should be behaving like a watchdog? When am I behaving like an attack dog? What are the things that turn me into an attack dog where I can actually say, how can I think about this and reframe this in a different way so I can go about it the watchdog way versus the attack dog way? Road rage comes to mind, right? There's a certain point in which we behave differently than we normally would. If somebody's clicking a pin, I can become a little more testy than I can, right? The same thing is true with these groups and the visibility and the impact. So I would say when you're looking at the community, and we'll just use the public meetings for an example, the guard dog is the person who's sitting in the meeting and never speaks. But they get back home and they say, this is what happened at tonight's meeting. I think you guys should do something about this. Here's the information. You're just spreading information. You're not empowering it. You're giving access to the information, but you're not taking any additional steps in any kind of way that's going to make a difference. You've gathered the info, you're sharing the info, but you're not really doing anything else beyond that, right? So I would say, like, in the bar of action steps taken, you're pretty low on the bar of action steps taken. The attack dog is the person who goes to the meeting and they talk every single meeting. It doesn't matter what the topic is. They are the person who's known as the bulldog of the community. They see themselves as the gatekeepers of what's going on. They say, well, if nobody else is going to stand up and talk, well, I'm going to make sure that I use that time for public comments. And you're the one that you hope the mic goes out on, right? Like, please let there be a technological problem and the lady not be able to speak, or the man not be able to speak, or the human, beautiful human with the right intentions, but the wrong energy. The wrong energy direction. And then the watchdog is the one who sat in the meeting, got up to the platform and said, this is my lived experience. This is the experience of my neighbor who can't be here because they're too old or they're too frail, who's also having this experience. This is the other person in the community I've talked to and shares their stories and says, I would like to hold you guys all accountable because each person I named is in each person's district, not just my own. So that's the difference, right? It's not that you have to get up every time. It's that you can share kind of those impactful stories that really create change. For me, stories are where it starts because it's the story that builds that momentum and that builds that energy for you. And the more you can get clear on, okay, what's that story actually? Did the story happen to just me? No, I was just the only one willing to talk about it because some people sued. Right? Like, but the story is happening all over the United States. It's not just my story. So my goal is to get other people sharing, like, this is also happening. But I wanted to create the resource for you so that when it happens to you, you're not in the dark like I was. You now say, here's how I can write a letter to my local government. Here's how I can provide an audit to my school where my children go and find out what the risk is in their local school. So for me, I was creating things like resources so that people could have more informed conversations. And that has actually created change in communities I was not a part of, in Wisconsin, in Michigan. Somebody used it in Louisiana. So for me, like, that's where I get the feels, is when a mom says, I don't know what to do, and your resources helped me do that. It's not for monetary gain. It's just so that they wouldn't feel as alone as I did. And I know that when we don't feel competent in something, we don't speak on something.
Yeah.
At least for a majority of us. We don't want to look or feel stupid. And if there's any risk of that happening, we don't do it. And so what I really wanted is for you to not look or feel stupid when it came to carbon monoxide, so that that principal was the one who looked uninformed, not you.
Oh my gosh. So I feel like you just drew a roadmap for the person listening who, as you're talking, is going, oh my gosh, there's this thing, right?
Yes.
But I don't know where to begin. You just gave them a roadmap of how to begin. And what I think is most powerful is the fact that you can actually be the most informed person in the room.
Yes.
Right? And that you have resources to help people with that. Now, I'm going to ask, are those resources available on your website? Do they have to wait for the book? How do they get access to those resources?
So the book is what we're working on now, right? So on NikkiJamesElmer.com, there's a tab for the book, which is The Watchdog Way. It lets you take The Watchdog Way quiz to find out where you are currently with how you address problems. It lets you lets you take a little magical quiz to say, am I a lap dog, a guard dog, an attack dog, or a watchdog? And then from there, you can actually start to understand, okay, what is that thing that I need to focus on? What is that one thing for me? For some people, it's many things. And what I tell people to focus on is focus on the thing that you truly will get fired up about. It causes you emotional stir, I would like to say. Not that you want to cry every time you talk about it, but it's something that's like, this is something I can set a boundary around and do healthily. I can do in a healthy way. If it's something that you haven't worked out with your therapist yet, please don't go try to attack it because you're not ready. You know, you're not ready to do that deep work yet. Where I met your friend Gwen was through heroic public speaking, and we were, she saw me still crying on stage talking about my kids being poisoned. That's how she met me, is I was doing my very first speech, learning how to do a keynote on my kids getting poisoned. And by the end of that training, it had turned into how to create change in your community and be a watchdog. It was really through that process of writing my stories down and saying, this isn't about me anymore. This is about other people and how they can do this. And so the book is going to come out in early 2026. It's called The Watchdog Way, How Everyday People Can Take Small Steps to Create Big Change in a World Gone Sideways. And it's really for those people who don't see themselves as activists. They don't see themselves going and starting a nonprofit. They might see themselves as a parent in a school line with a lot on their plate, but really wants to make a difference and is wondering, how do I spend my time and energy to do that in a way that is impactful in regards to something that is important to me? So maybe you're a child of a wheelchair user and you want other businesses to understand that you can only go to 10% of the businesses in your community because your child who uses a wheelchair can't get into the rest of them. Maybe that's your thing. Maybe your thing is, this is what type 2 diabetes looks like or type 1 diabetes looks like in terms of access when something happens in the school system, right? So you never know what it is, but I guarantee you, you probably have 30 things in your lived experience that you have an opportunity to change. It's just whether or not you see yourself as being somebody who can champion that change. My hope is that you can, because there is something in there. It's whether or not you want to take that next step to do it.
Okay, so thank you for the explanation, because I do think it's important for the person who is just new to the idea that this is possible,
yes,
that they have a path forward. But now, before we get to the end, I'm going to ask you to speak to somebody else.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you to speak to the person who is doing the work, and they are tired. Right? They're in it. They are doing the best they can, but the stamina is waning because, as you know, as I know, some laws, the wheels move so slowly and the winds are so slight and incremental.
Yes.
What would you say to that person who is doing the work but still feels like nothing is shifting?
So for me, it was about reframing, right? So this incident for me happened right before COVID. And so during COVID, it felt like nothing was happening. And that was when it had just happened to me. So that was when I was most interested to talk about it. Nobody was willing to listen because...
Right, because nobody's going to school, so it's not a problem.
Nobody's going to school. Nobody's going, you know, law sessions and congressional hearings weren't happening, you know, because everything was being pushed back. But what I would say is, having done that and having kept doing that, is for a lot of these people doing the work, a lot of times they're in the industry in which they're wanting to create the change, right? So mm-hmm. they work for that nonprofit, or they work for those things. So I would say in those instances, you know, really lean on the resources available for healthy workplace culture. Make sure you're taking care of yourself, because you can't leave it. It's your paycheck. Mm-hmm. In my case, it wasn't my paycheck. It was my passion project. And so as somebody living with a chronic illness, I was already very in tune with my body of, what do I need to listen to? How do I need to set boundaries around mm-hmm. how I'm willing to move forward? What does a win look like? A win doesn't mean I completely let the rest of my life catch fire while I'm working on this. A win for me is I'm moving on with the remainder of my life as normal, and I'm making time, this little window of time, to make incremental progress in this work that I'm passionate about. For me, the way that I could do that is, these are the resources that can live. I can spend a little bit of time sprinting and creating these resources that can live without me. As soon as that resource is done and alive on a website, I can move off of that and let Google take over, right? I can put a little bit of money. If somebody says, hey, I want to donate to your cause, what's the best way for me to do that? Cool. A monetary donation would be great. Please know that I'm not a 501c3, so this isn't a tax write-off for you. Mm-hmm. But I can use this directly towards ad spend to put this in neighborhoods where carbon monoxide has been a problem, and make sure that these parents and families have access to resources. And it was directing them to the website. Or I can buy carbon monoxide alarms for daycares. So one of the things that I started doing is saying, okay, I now live in Alabama. I originally lived mm-hmm. in Virginia. Even though Alabama is considered a good CO state mm-hmm. in terms of they have a lot of regulations and laws around carbon monoxide, not necessarily around public education. So mm-hmm. what I want to do in the state of Alabama, it's not about changing the law here. It's about making sure that the people who are on the front line really do understand the signs and symptoms that can happen in their environments. And so I have a nice long list of all the daycares. I'm starting with the daycares because they're the highest risk. So mm-hmm. I have a nice long list of all the daycares. And then one by one, I can visit one daycare a week. And by the end of the year, I've seen 52 daycares and have had 52 conversations with frontline workers and put something in their break room and given them the resources to say, this is what you need to know, and help them audit their business while I'm there. This is no charge. This is something that I do. But I had to start understanding the difference between taking credit and creating change. I am not the person who takes credit for the changes happening in the CO safety space. I'm a part of that wheel. Mm-hmm. I happen to use my story in a much more public way than some other people can. But what I wanted to do is create the impact. And so as people go on this journey, doing the work, you know, facing the burnout, take care of yourself, because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't create the change. So think about these setting healthier boundaries, whether that's, I will do this one thing a week, and outside of that one thing, I don't do it. If you need different themes or different seasons, kind of schedule that out and say, this is the season I'll focus on this. Next season, I'll focus on that, right? So think about it like you would a business, really. You know, me and you are business owners, so we understand this, right? Like, I think about it like, what am I doing in quarter one? What am I doing in quarter two? And I like to think about those small wins that lead to big change. So everybody's expecting that big win. That's not the way it works. I happen to have a law change in year one. Mm-hmm. That's a miracle. That's a fluke. It just happened to be. We were talking about kids' safety in schools all year long, right? The mm-hmm. timing was right for me. But what I will tell most people is it's going to be about those little wins. And so I like to take it, if the big goal is out here, I work mm-hmm. backwards from that big goal and say, how do I need to start to establish those mile markers in that big marathon race? What is mile one's marker? What is mile two's marker? And so mile one might be understanding what I'm trying to create change around. What are the rebuttals? When somebody says, these are the 10 most frequently asked questions or the rebuttals that I get, what mm-hmm. are my responses to those? Because you're going to run into that.
Yep.
And if you fumble that ball, you're going to look like somebody who is not the most informed person in the room. Mm-hmm. And I want them to be. On their subject, I want them to be the most informed. Do all the informational interviews. Find all of the data from credible sources. Really spend that first 3 months understanding and learning about the problem so that you can go out and make a bigger change at a later time. It's not about making that big change immediately.
Okay, so that is excellent news, because that's the thing, right? It's focused on, you know, in the business world, we talk about focus your goals on your output versus your outcome, because yes, you can't control the outcome,
right,
but you can control what you do,
yes,
right? And if you do the action, whatever the action is, like you're mentioning, going to a preschool every single week or daycare every single week, as long as you do that, you can trust that at the end of the year, some outcome has happened.
Yes.
Even though you can't control that, all you can control is which daycare you're going to each week.
Yeah. And that's an hour a week out of my time. Mm-hmm. Instead of, I'm going to go try and see every daycare on this list in 3 weeks and right, creating this giant overwhelming feeling. Instead, it's little by little. And each time you do it, you learn more and more about, this is where I'm seeing more problems regarding this thing that I'm focused on.
Yes. Yes. I love this. So before we let you go, we've got a little quick round that we call Freak Flags Fly. And I'm eventually going to be able to say that without stuttering. Today is not that day, though. So it's 5 fast questions, no wrong answers, just whatever comes to mind. Are you prepared?
Sure. Let's do this.
All right. So finish this sentence. You're my kind of freak if.
You're my kind of freak if you nerd out on things that you care about instead of things that you don't.
Okay, I like that. So what's something you love that your friends simply don't get?
Serial killer documentaries.
Oh my gosh. We recently had an interview with somebody who writes crime fiction. She writes all about serial killers.
I love it.
So you guys could be besties.
It's how I detox. I get stress relief by watching serial killer documentaries.
And I just happen to know, because late at night I scroll social, you're in good company. There are a lot of women who that is how they decompress. Okay. So what community would you infiltrate just to understand it better?
MAGA? I live in Alabama. I am surrounded by very specific thoughts and feelings towards mm-hmm. the world. And I grew up traveling around the United States and have been ingrained in lots of conversations and communities. I have not yet understood. I don't yet understand the point of view that they're currently embracing. And I mm-hmm. would, I don't know that I would enjoy that process, but I would want to do it just to understand it a little bit more and understand outside of how the media is reporting it.
Right.
What is that frame of reference and frame of mind? What is that end goal?
That is spoken like a true journalist, right? It's like I don't want the information filtered.
Yes.
I want to go straight to the source.
Yes.
I want to ask the questions. I want to hear it with my own ears and apply my own filter, my own lens.
Yes.
Okay. What tool, ritual, or practice helps you stay connected to your people?
I mean, I would say every time a carbon monoxide incident occurs, it's always reported on mm-hmm. formerly Twitter, also known as the X. And as much as I loathe the platform, mm-hmm. it's absolutely where I can engage with journalists and make sure that they're reporting the story correctly mm-hmm. instead of giving the public inaccurate information from the loving PIOs who have not yet told
okay.
them the whole story.
It's okay. There's nothing you could say about a PIO that I haven't heard personally. So we get it.
Yep.
We know the role we play on both
yes.
sides. Okay, finally, before I let you go, what is someone doing freakishly good work who you think deserves a bigger stage?
Oh, so I am a big fan of Dr. Amanda Crowell. She is the author of Great Work, and she has a podcast called The Great Work Podcast. And I used this book tremendously during finding out, like, what is my great work now, right? And mm-hmm. so Dr. Amanda Crowell, she holds a PhD. She's based out of New Jersey. She's a fast talker and hand talker like me. I just really love how she just pushes you out of your comfort zone and says, what's really important for you to ship? Go ship it. right? Like, go focus on it and go do it. I love people that empower you to do something that you might not have thought of previously. Those are my favorite people.
Yeah, catalysts are such an important aspect of our society. So, Nikki, oh my gosh, it has been a joy to connect with you. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your courage, your perspective, but also for lending your voice to the show so that more people can hear not just about the impact you've made, but really about the impact that they can make in their own communities. And for everyone listening, I just want to say, if you've ever been told you're not qualified, not credible, or not enough, please hear Nikki and hear this episode and let it put on your sticky note that if you've lived it, you're ready, because your freak flag just might be somebody else's lifeline.
Yep.
Thank you again. That's it for this episode of Find Your Freaks. To help more weirdos find their way here, subscribe, rate, and leave a review. And if you're craving connection, join the Freak Show at findyourfreaks.com.
What makes you weird makes you wonderful. Normal was never the point.